Welcome to episode 53 of the Men Who Save Football, the Dundalk FC Fancast. A big, big week for Dundalk FC. Tumultuous, lots of comings and goings, lots of rumours coming to fruition. And of course, there was a game as well. Turned out to be a 1-1 draw against Longford Town. Guys, we'll start right there. What did you make of the performance?
Extremely odd. Now, I suppose we can't talk about the game without talking about it in the context of the fact that we have a new manager. But I suppose how much impact, and we will talk about that in a moment, but how much impact he would have had is hard to tell. The game itself, I think everyone wanted, expected, needed a win after last week and after the break and given Longford's position, and it didn't happen. So a draw, now in the context of the game, I'll take a draw. But in the context of where we're at, it's pretty hard to take. I think a draw is the fair result, given the game. But 1-1, you know, there's another multiverse where this game is 5-5, because it was mad. I mean, Longford hit the post, Stanton cleared off the line, and Abebe made an amazing save. We had a whole heap of chances that in another night, in another year, in another season go in. We had a penalty saved. So, like, the 1-1, I think a draw is a fair result, but 1-1 does not reflect the game at all for me. Positives for me is that I think that was the most attacking Dundalk we've seen in an age. And that is borne out by, although frustratingly, the amount of chances we had. I mean, we should have had way more goals. But one of the problems all season long for me is that we've had no chances. I mean, balls into the box have not been happening. The problem tonight, I think, is that we were getting the balls in. It's just that the finishing wasn't there. But equally, I think Martin said in the chat earlier on, it was that the opposition just seemed to score with any chance they get. And that's how the game started, which is, I think Dundalk started well. And I think it was definitely the run of the play was about us. And then, you know, Longford ended up scoring, I think, from probably their first chance. And it just seems like that, which is just that teams score against us. And the thing with the goal is, for me, is to me, it's not about tactics or position at all. It's the mentality, which is totally set in the club. I mean, when the goal went in, partially I just shrugged and said, well, of course, because it is just the rot is so deep in the club that of course Longford are going to come and score. Of course we're going to lose to Waterford. Of course these things are going to happen. Because it's so existentially the club is on its knees that of course Longford are going to score first. When we got back into it, well, it was amazing. Great to see a goal by Chris Shields. Quite possibly his last ever performance in Oriel Park. And if that is true, for him to bow out with a goal is nice. But from then on in, as I said, chances on both sides. I mean, Longford had three amazing chances, as I said, and a BB save, cleared off the line, and they hit the post. We had a whole host of chances, skied it wide. We could have got a goal in like the 94th minute as well. So a draw for me is fair, but Jesus, it could have gone either way.
Yeah, I thought it was a poor quality contest between two poor quality teams who are really struggling for form. And, you know, looking at the two teams that we've most recently played, like Waterford, I think, came into that game on the back of five or six straight defeats. Longford came into this game on the back of five straight defeats. And we made both of them look reasonably good. Like we came away from these two games with a defeat and a draw. And I think we said beforehand that we were going to know a whole lot more about this Dundalk team after these, you know, sort of next four games. And the first two of those games have been particularly bad. And I think what we're really seeing is a Dundalk team that are battling against relegation, because these look like two teams that were threatened by relegation and with a lot of problems. So, you know, Rory's right. There were reasons to be positive. We created a lot of chances. We also missed all those chances. I thought the substitutions were actually very good. I thought Greg Sluggett and Rivas Jarkovskis in particular brought a lot to the game. Like they threatened a lot. But overall, I thought there was some really worrying stuff I think the front four didn't function at all. I thought, you know, not to pick on individual players, but I thought Hubin was bad. I thought Kelly was bad. I thought Duffy wasn't really in the game and didn't affect it at all. And I thought Sean Murray was bad. And, you know, they just weren't in the game at all. I thought in midfield, we didn't attempt any triangles. Like, there was no attempts to sort of maneuver the ball around Longford and do that. Like, typically we sort of battled for the ball in midfield and then tried to knock it long into wide areas or knock it long to Hubin. And like I said, none of those forward players had a good game. And so there was just, you know, nothing really coming of that. And I think it's been a long time since we've actually seen this Dundalk side work an opposition in any way, like put together passages of play and try and move the ball around. And so it really wasn't very surprising. Like, this is sort of more of the same of what we had in recent weeks. But like I say, it was turgid stuff for a lot of the game. And I think the result is pretty fair. Both sides had a lot of chances. Both sides missed a lot of chances. And I thought, you know, ironically, the Chris Shields goal was, I think, one of the sort of least interesting moves of the game. Like, it was just a corner played into the middle of the 6-yard box and he got on the end of it. But yeah, a sad thought that we might lose what I think is our season's top scorer in this transfer window. Like, that's going to be a blow in more ways than one.
I was among the lucky 100 who actually were drawn to attend in person. So I was kind of really curious what the impression was, you know, on LOI TV as opposed to what it was like to be there in person. I just briefly, before we started chatting, made a couple of notes about what I thought of the game. The team didn't seem to lack in effort. And that's one of the kind of frustrating things about it. You're looking around to see, you know, where has it gone wrong? Why are we struggling at the foot of the table rather than where we'd usually be towards the top? There doesn't seem to be any lack of application among the team. And in a way, that's worrying. But what there does seem to be a lack of, and you mentioned it, I had it underlined as well, we really lack quality. There was a lot of time when we were in possession, we were working the ball, we just required to keep the ball, and suddenly there'd be a rather undisciplined, you know, overambitious pass, and we turned the possession over quite easily, and that was characteristic. Quality was an issue, and then other very long-standing problems surfaced as well. The fact that, you know, the squad is unbalanced, we lack a playmaker, we lack a box-to-box midfielder, and we had put out, I think, as well a balanced a team as Vinny could choose from the players available, but we had, once again, a centre midfielder playing centre-back. And we also had then a similar sort of set, a similar mixture of players in the middle of the midfield. Now, whereas I thought, you know, there was moments of quality from each of those players, there was also an inability to really work that Longford opposition. I mean, we simply don't have a player who can put on the afterburners and break the lines of the opposition, find, like, move, you know, past the defensive midfielder, really bear down on the defence. So that was totally missing. And we don't seem to have a player who can play off, just off Patrick Hoban and in that number 10 role that can and can really test the defence. So Longford, you know, looked well organised, well disciplined. One of the striking things about the game is the teams look very evenly matched. If you had brought along a person who didn't know the history or the background or the budget off either side, they would be, you know, hard pressed to pick out which was the, you know, recently dominant team. Once again, a well-organized, rudimentary side on a small budget seemed to cause us an awful lot of frustration. And I think the third thing that we were missing alongside quality and creativity was probably confidence. There seemed to be, you know, plenty of endeavor, but just an inability to really find that inspirational move that really unlocked the defense. So what we ended up doing was we saw the ball go back to Andy Boyle and Chris Shields a lot. Rather than moving forward and developing, basically pinning Longford back, we seemed to find that Darragh Leahy got the possession or Michael Duffy got the possession. He was often closed down very quickly by a midfielder or a defender, and he turned backwards and the ball went back to Andy Boyle or Chris Shields at centre half. And an awful lot of our play went backwards and sideways. And, you know, if we cast our memory back to when we were, you know, in our pomp, there was a great deal more emphasis on getting the ball further up the pitch and maintaining it and be a little bit more clever on it. Now, there are a couple of problems. We are missing, despite the size of the squad, we are missing a few key players, perhaps players who can be more creative, unlock those defenses, and also that high energy, hard running box to box midfielder that we have said we're missing for quite some time. But also, if Vinny Peart has a job in his hands, it would seem that job is to restore confidence, because this team seems to perhaps, you know, lack a little bit of that, which would help them perhaps be a little bit more adventurous, a little bit more free spirited, and a little bit more creative. Now, despite all that, it was something of a crazy game. I mean, Longford went 1-0 up with, you know, seemingly a fairly rudimentary move, like a quick Alicio Abibi kick out, was intercepted, possession turned over, fairly decent cross into the box, and then a one-touch kind of finish to the corner of the net. Now, to me, it looked like they, you know, a pretty decent finish. Any shot on goal that hits the side panel of the net, I think is, you know, usually difficult to save. It didn't look like a goalkeeping mistake to me. It looked like, you know, he just got lucky when he struck the ball. And suddenly, once again, you know, a team that's low on confidence rocked back somewhat against the run of play. But we could have really been in deep, deep trouble when Longford then hit the crossbar. You know, I mean, if we had gone 2-0 there, and you imagine our game could have totally come off the rails. So for Chris to get us back into it was great. And I think, you know, one of the things we've complained about has been, you know, sometimes a malaise tends to set in on the dock, and you can kind of tell they're not going to get back into this game. My impression watching it tonight was that we were getting sort of closer and stronger in the second half. We began the second half creating quite a few chances. I think when Ravis came on, he was a real attacking threat, got some decent balls into the box that could have been converted. Unfortunate that we couldn't take advantage of the penalty. But in the final 10 minutes and extra time, we seemed to create probably as many chances as we had in the previous 80 minutes. And we're very unfortunate not to put at least one of them away, particularly Michael Duffy's chance in the dying minutes. So all in all, I know that, you know, we do find ourselves at the bottom of the table, and you would have been hoping once again, like it's our second attempt and we haven't bet Longford. And the spectre of a relegation battle does loom. But did you guys see enough in the chances that we created in the second half to indicate that there might be some improvement there?
I'm going to say definitely. I mean, it's not a good result. There's a lot of, I think Martin and you have definitely nailed a lot of problems structurally and tactically with the team. But the thing I would take away, we have to look for positives, and there were some positives, was the effort and the fight. Now, I know people can roll their eyes and say, yeah, listen, that's the thing. But we need something, and we do need the players to care. And that has been a big thing. And you know, by the way, the reaction each week when you ask for a comment on Twitter recently has been, the players don't care. The players don't care. I mean, that is a big thing that's coming out from the fans, right? Players don't care. Tonight, I think we definitely saw players that were putting in a shift. It's going to take a while. To turn a ship takes a while. And listen, things aren't going to change overnight. A win would have been really nice. But definitely, it was the most attacking I've seen this in a while. Listen, the chances didn't go into the net. But we were getting chances, when in previous games, we simply weren't getting them. How many times have we seen Dundalk where it just absolutely fizzles out in that last third? I mean, the energy completely gets pulled. We were getting the ball into the box. I mean, the frustrating thing is that we were missing chances from yards away. But at least we were getting chances from yards away. So there's something there which says there was a bit of fight. And maybe I'm grasping for straws here, but I'll take that there's a bit of fight. There are definitely structural problems. There are definitely issues. I will also say is that the team selection was interesting because it was a balanced team, and it seemed like a kind of a traditional team. Maybe a back to basics type team, maybe with less influence from outside, could we say. Some of the, you know, the names that were in and the names that were not in, it just seemed to be a slightly more traditional side. And I think we saw something. I don't think that can be denied. Again, like everyone else, I think a draw is a fair result. I don't think we deserve anything more than that. But it could have been a 4-4 draw. It could have been a 4-1 loss. It could have been a 4-1 win. Who knows? You know what I mean? But I think there was definitely more spark there.
Yeah, I think we need to talk about the pitch as well. Like, I'm worried that it has deteriorated significantly over the past couple of years. Now, when it was put in, I think it was a huge improvement over the 3G pitch that was there beforehand. I think it was possibly ruined by a UEFA official who came in before the Levadia-Tallinn match in 2018 and demanded that, you know, more rubber was put down. It's never quite played the same since. But in the past while, like, it seems to be a real obstacle more than anything for the Dundalk players who, to a degree, are trying to knock the ball around, you know, and sort of zip it across the turf. And there was a lot of sort of ball bobbling around. It's hard for people just to run with it, you know, more than about 5 yards without it, you know, sort of skipping off the surface. And I don't know, like, in a way, I think we've had a lot of investment by Peak Six, you know, off the pitch in terms of facilities for the players, like the gym, all sorts of things like that. But if you look at the actual surface that they have to play on, it's not in good shape. And I think the style of football that I think Dundalk want to play, at the very least, is being very badly hindered by what's there at the moment. And I don't know, like, it's hard to see a big investment coming the way of either spectator facilities or the pitch itself in the near future. And, you know, I don't see an easy way out for the players. They're just going to have to put up with this for the next while. But I think that is also having an impact on the performances at the moment. Maybe some of the reason why we seem to play a little bit better away from home, on sort of better grass surfaces.
Yeah, it's a kind of a double-edged debate, that, because I think when we were all conquering, when after the artificial surface was put in, at a time when we were playing quite poorly, and we had a fairly weak team, and when everybody came and bet us on it, the opposition had zero complaints about it. When we started to become all conquering on it, all of a sudden there were sneers about what an advantage it was to us and how unnatural it was, and you get kind of snide comments from commentators.
But I will also just interject here. My dad once in 2014 did a statistical analysis that we were better away, we were better on the road in 2014 than we were at home.
I think Stephen Kenny even mentioned that round about the time that people were saying we had an unfair advantage because we had an artificial pitch. The artificial pitch, of course, requires maintenance. So does a real one. I think the cost of maintaining a grass pitch is around about $100,000 a year. That's properly, you know, I mean, you can lay down a grass pitch and just have somebody poke it with a fork and hope it'll be in workable condition. We do remember that the last grass surface before the artificial one in Oriel was really dreadful. It had degenerated so much. You could see the ball bobble in every direction of the compass as soon as somebody tried to run with it. And I think that was the logic of getting in the artificial surface, was that it had lower maintenance cost. And we didn't have the dilemma of, you know, remember, like, we had to move to Drogheda to play a European game at one point because a newly laid pitch during a dry summer had just failed. The grass had failed to grow on it. So, like, I mean, like everything else in League of Ireland over the years, I mean, it does require resources, and sometimes those resources aren't allocated. I think since some of the players who are part of that dominant era have retired, many of them have said that they prefer grass. And I think everybody, I have to recall John Gill saying something similar, the best surface you can play on is a well-maintained, properly maintained grass surface. Now, it's just a bit of a shame because, like, whereas, you know, $100,000 on a pitch is quite a lot of your budget in normal times for a normal club. You know, we do have people who are content to spend more than that on signing on fees for players that, you know, how can I put this diplomatically? Perhaps that money would be better spent on a surface that all players could benefit from rather than a single player could benefit but from.
Just a few things on the pitch. A few things. I mean, I've constantly defended the pitch, sometimes out of stubbornness, but I will say a few things. It is UEFA approved. When people argue about it, I'll say, take up your arguments with UEFA. If people claim that these pitches aren't good for football, they're used in other leagues across Europe. We're not like some outlier, right? They're approved. If your problem is with those types of pitches, don't take it up at Dundalk. Take it up at UEFA, because the pitch is approved. Whenever we're allowed to play at Oriel Park, the pitch is approved by UEFA.
And it undergoes a load of tests that grass pitches don't.
Exactly. And here's the other thing, by the way. You claim it costs 100,000 to maintain a pitch. I got news for you. A lot of League of Ireland clubs are not paying that 100 grand. And here's my other issue, by the way, as well, is it's easy to have a go at Dundalk about our pitch, but people just shrug their shoulders when, and I'm sorry to name clubs here, but you go up to Dalymount and it looks like the surface of the moon. I mean, you can see the undulations.
Yeah.
You can literally see the ball go up and down. You can have a go at Dundalk over a plastic pitch, but no one talks about the fact that other pitches are like three-dimensional.
There's a drumlin in the middle of the goal mouth in Dalymount Park, basically.
But that's never mentioned, but Dundalk's plastic pitch is mentioned. I always find it's a very lazy thing, especially in recent years, RTE commentators.
Yeah.
If you've got nothing to say, you can fill in, like, oh, look, there they had the plastic pitch there.
Oh, but hang on.
But no one talks about the bogs.
Yeah, but like, when you've got RTE commentators coming down to Oriel Park, they usually don't have a clue about the club, the players, or anything that else that's going on in there.
So yeah, this is why I'm defensive about the pitch. Exactly. Because I think I will say, the pitch is in bad condition.
No, it is.
It's evidence of the rot at the club is seeping through to many areas. But I think it's...
the other side
it's not our main concern.
But but the other side of the plastic pitch is, from somebody who lives in the Carrick Road, when I go past Oriel Park, I hear kids playing on it all the time. So you're looking at secondary schools and you're looking at third levels, you're looking at people. It's constantly in use. It actually is a focal point of a local community. So like, it's being used, and it's being used very, very well. You spend 100 grand on it a year. Because I remember Mickey Fox, when he used to be there in the 80s, Mickey Fox wouldn't let you look at the pitch, never mind walk on the pitch. Like, he was completely and utterly, you know, protective of that beautiful pitch that he kept in Oriel Park. Superb. So, like, you can have it one way or the other way, but you're dead right, Rory. It is UEFA approved, and it is what it is, and we use it. It's used in the community. And you know what? RTE fucking commentators come down and they spit, oh, the state of the pitch, it's like this, it's like that, it's like the other. But you know what? It's the pitch, it's Oriel Park, it's home to Dundalk FC, passes all the regulations, get over it.
Martin, you have triggered Oriel patriotism here.
Yeah. I feel like I've opened a bit of a Pandora's box here.
Yeah.
I mean, there's many League of Ireland fan complaints about the Oriel Park pitch and the state of their own pitch in the middle of summer, when grass growth should be at its best, is really a thing to behold. But at the same time, I don't think this pitch is suiting Dundalk FC or serving Dundalk FC as well as it could be, which was really the point that I was trying to make in the first place. Like, it's not about pleasing other people's fans, it's about pleasing ourselves.
Can we sum it up by saying there have been bad faith arguments made by many, many parties against the Oriel artificial surface, which I think solved a lot of problems, because at the previous grass pitch was... you know, it had degenerated. It was a dreadful surface. And I think at least, like, the advantage of an artificial surface is it's consistent. Now, it's consistently good if you maintain it properly. It can become consistently average. But we don't have to worry about flooding. You don't have to worry about it freezing over. You know, all of those, like when we were a winter league, you know, I suppose those were more priorities. But yes, we can take all those bad faith arguments and we can cast them into the dustbin. But I do think there is something to what you say, because our own ex-players have said it too, that, you know, unless you're going to maintain, like, those pitches, they're not maintenance free. Unless you're going to maintain them also, it can become a liability. And in addition to that, I think initially the logic behind the artificial surface was that we couldn't really afford to maintain a proper grass surface, and that it was vulnerable to the weather and all of that, and it was getting worse and worse. Now that we have monies, bags, owners, that shouldn't really be an issue. And I think, once again, like many things around the ground, it's something that perhaps could be improved. Whether it's likely to be or not, that's in the hands of Peak Six. But you know, we can rest that debate for now, because we have bigger news, if you will permit me. You slightly let the cat out of the bag there, Rory, but as Dundalk FC's number one Vinnie Perth loyalist, a man who, you know, wanted Vinnie back so badly that I had to begin to snip that bit out of our podcast because it was becoming such a regular reoccurrence, people were going to kind of get bored of it. But yes, the man is back. Sensationally, bit of a topsy-turvy week. multiple rumors seemingly coming to fruition at the same time. It was Dave Rogers as assistant under Jim Magilton. Then it was Dave Rogers as manager outright. Then it wasn't Dave Rogers. Then it was Vinnie Peart. And finally, the day after he returned, took training, eventually the club came out. And Vinnie is back. Are you delighted?
Yeah, well, I am happy. I have to say, like, I have mentioned on this podcast a number of times that I'm in favour of him returning since the rumours started. And it's all on the record. I would say that, like, for me, the club is in an extremely bad position and we don't need to go back over it. We all know it. And we all know where this podcast stands on it. I mean, we all know where the issues are. We all know where the problems are. And at this stage, what's the point in repeating them? But every Friday we have to play and every day training has to happen and teams need to be picked. And soon, squad appointments will have to be made, stuff like this, right? So we need a manager. And I think in the current climate, because we've talked about who would come, you know, who could you get, who could work, blah, blah, blah. I've maintained since Filippo and Shane Keegan and them left that the best option of all the rumours floating around was Vinny, for multiple reasons. A, he's a league-winning manager. So you want to get in someone and people say, well, we need quality. Like, we're going to complain about people coming in with no badges. We're going to complain about people coming in who have only managed underage sides. All that stuff is legit. But if someone says, we've a League of Ireland winning manager who has won it within the last few years, that's a bonus. Someone who knows the town, someone who knows the club, all bonuses for me. I think Vinny has proven his worth. He's proven he's a good coach. It doesn't come without, I guess, some worries, which have been vocalised, and maybe you guys want to come in on that. But given the circumstances where we need a manager, and I will say another thing, given some of the names that have been floated about, and I'm not talking about Dave Rogers, but given some of the names that have been floated about as potentials in recent weeks, by God, it's by far and away the best choice, I think, because we were linked with some other managers at some other clubs. So for me, yeah. I mean, I'm not happy at all. I don't think it's like, let's not have a parade down the street for the state of Dundalk FC. But the fact that we need a manager in, I don't think Jim Magilton should be it. I didn't think Filippo should be it. I didn't think Shane Keegan should be it. So yeah, I'm happy with that appointment. The obvious questions now come in that people are going to say is, can our manager work under our chairman? That remains to be seen. Can a sacked person come back and work under the person who sacked them? That's a crazy scenario. So there's a huge of ifs, there's a huge buts, there's a huge questions to be answered. But someone needs to take training, someone needs to pick the team, someone needs to send the players out. And I think Vinnie Peart should be the person.
Do you think, though, that this is an admission, maybe, you know, sort of subtly, but do you think it's an admission by the chairman or the board of the club that they were wrong to sack Vinnie Peart in the first place?
I actually don't know. I would never deign to put myself in the position of anyone, let alone those people. Possibly, they may say they were wrong. Maybe not. Maybe it's a totally pragmatic decision. So I know what you're saying, which is maybe they're saying we got it wrong. Or maybe it's a pragmatic, we need a manager. We had a league-winning manager. He is willing to work with us again. And we can talk about Vinny's motivations. And he's been in interviews, but prior to the announcement and post-announcement about why he has come back, maybe we should take him at face value. But maybe they realise we need a quality manager and there's a quality manager who wants to do the job.
And we know that they're stat-driven as well, okay? So when you look at the stats, like, since Vinny left, our domestic form has been absolutely abysmal. Has been absolutely woeful. So, like, you maybe you're looking at the stats going, okay, let's listen to the people who actually know about the League of Ireland, whether they're just guys who don't know anything about football, or whether they're just guys that are, you know, reporting on football, or whether they're guys that know about football. But the League of Ireland's, and I've been banging on about this since this podcast started, it's a very unique league. It's a very hard league. It's a very competitive league. And it's a league that you need to know from the inside out. That's how we were so successful under Stephen Kenny. Like when Stephen Kenny put that team together, when he arrived in Dundalk in that first year, this guy's sitting down in the wee house, Petter McArdle's, and all over the town going, where did he get these guys from? And all of a sudden, we finished second to pass that year, and we go on. I would imagine, like, I mean, in my lifetime, I think it's probably the best, you know, run of form of any League of Ireland team. I think, like, the heights that we reached was unreal. So maybe they're actually looking at it going, right, we need somebody who knows the League of Ireland, somebody who knows that when you go to Ballybuffet on a cold Tuesday night, or you go down, you know, to Longford on whatever night it is, if you're going down there, that you need to be able to put in a performance. And we need somebody that knows the league. And maybe that's where we're back at. I don't know whether, yeah, I think if you take Vinny's points on with his interview with Gavin on the Dundalk FC channel, like, I think we do need to be patient. Like, we have a mismatch in a squad there. It's, I mean, it's nobody's squad, it's everybody's squad. It's me, you, and everybody else's squad. So I think that we need to, you know, give them a little bit of time, let them get settled, and hope that he gets that little bit of space to do what a head coach or manager needs to do. You know what I mean? Like Vinny said it in the interview himself, like, he was all for the director of football within, you know, the structure of Dundalk FC. Jim McGilton has that. The two of them care very much about the football club. So let's hope that Vinny's given that little bit of breathing space to actually get the squad together.
I think you pay our owners too much of a compliment to say they're stats driven. I think we're driven not by statistics, but by purely the capriciousness of whatever thought occurs to the owners' heads at that moment. And you would have evidence for that in the sort of mixed signals that were sent out by the appointment about the appointment this week. Now, Dave Rogers apparently was the other candidate, and you know the word is that he was recommended by McGilton, and that recommendation was overturned by the owners. Now, whether it was overturned by Matt or Bill, who knows? But it does sort of create a curious landscape. Yes, Vinny is back. He's back 10 months after he was sacked, reappointed by the people who sacked him. So I suppose we can welcome that, and that we never agreed with that decision to part with him in the first place. But he now has a situation where he's, you know, we have one concern, which is, will the conditions that led to all the trouble that preceded his departure last time, will they reoccur? But additionally, he seems to have a director of football who wanted somebody else in. Now, that also, you know, says, well, what exactly is the director of football for if you're not going to take his advice? That role, which was so ill-defined when it was created, Bill didn't seem to know what exactly he was looking for beyond somebody who would be the boss. We've had Jim McGilton bounced into the role of caretaker manager and now out again. And you just wonder how that relationship is going to play out. It could work. You know, let's hope that it does, because Jim McGilton is, once again, a man of, you know, who's played the game at a very, very high level and surely has something to contribute. But about the Dave Rogers candidacy, which seemed to be, you know, more or less confirmed until something derailed it. Some people might suspect that it was due to the manner in which he left the club last time, but I don't think that can really be an issue. What would worry me about Dave Rogers is that, like his predecessor, like Filippo, he doesn't have managerial experience at a senior level. We know that he's been coaching in the United States. Now, at this stage, you know, I don't think that's sufficient to get the Dundalk manager's job. I would say that to manage Dundalk FC, it should not be your first job in football. It's too big a job to be learning as you do it. And like, if we take somebody, say, if we go way back to first-time managers, like somebody with the caliber of John Hewitt, who was managed by Alex Ferguson, who had a European Cup winner's medal. You would think somebody with that pedigree would be successful, but with no managerial experience coming into a league that he was not familiar with, you know, he took a league-winning squad and brought them, you know, to the verge of, well, he was sacked before they ended up in a relegation playoff. I just think we should learn from our mistakes. Giving this job to a manager with no senior experience shouldn't be considered. I mean, people mention names like Tim Clancy, and I think that's far more eligible candidate. Somebody who is doing it at a Longford Town or a Drogheda United or a UCD, if they've done it, if they've taken players, if they've worked on low resources and they've taken players and improved them and made teams competitive and attractive and been successful, I think such a person becomes a candidate for a Dundalk job. I don't think the Dundalk job should be somebody's first job. Now, maybe Dave Rogers will go on to be a great manager. Maybe he'll go on to win leagues with a League of Ireland club. But I don't think his first club should be Dundalk FC. You know, it just I don't think anybody's first club should be Dundalk FC.
Okay, I was going to say that, like, I think Dave Rogers has managed, like, some senior teams, like, when he was at Arizona, but I think neither himself nor Jim McGuinness, who I think was also in the frame at one stage, like, neither of them have what I would consider a stellar reputation of success during those managerial periods in the US. Like, both of them left, I think, under, you know, a bit of a cloud. And I think the thing that we always argued for, regardless of who was going to be appointed, that it needed to be somebody with a knowledge of the League of Ireland, who knew sort of the players who were in and around the league and who might be available, maybe coming back from England. And I don't think either Dave Rogers or Jim McGuinness, I think, were well-placed to do that, or certainly not as well-placed as the likes of Vinnie Perth. Now, I said it before that when Vinnie Perth, you know, left, or at least when he was in his most successful spell, he had Rory Higgins at his side, he had, like, Stephen O'Donnell on the staff at one stage, he had John Gill beside him, and none of those people are present anymore. And so it's a very different scenario that Vinnie finds himself in now. The word that we're hearing out of the club is that, like, the budget is under pressure to come back down, so it seems very unlikely that he's going to be able to bring in, you know, sort of a selection of his own coaches to sort of help him out. And as a result, I don't know if we should really expect you know, things to be the same as they were before he departed. So I don't know. I think this is a new and different situation. And I think a new and different relationship, as you've described, between Vinnie Perth and Jim McGilton, with, you know, we're going to need some time basically to see how it plays out.
Whereas I suppose Vinnie's return will be greeted optimistically by all of us. It's not a panacea. Like, we can't expect things to just simply pick up from the all-conquering full season that he had before. Like I said, there is that question of, will he be able to bring anybody in to address the deficiencies in the squad in the transfer window? Will he be allowed to move on players that are perhaps picks of the director of football or the owners, which he doesn't see as part of the future? It was noticeable that most of the Filippo era signings were not selected to start. I think we started with Abibi and Sam Stanton, who are the only Filippo era recruits. We saw the return of Dara Leahy, who had been sort of more or less frozen out of the team until recently, who of course was a Vinnie Perth signing. So it will be interesting to see whether or not he can bring in that creative player that we're lacking. Will Patching, of course, is a candidate to come back into that role, so we'll have to see how that goes. Vinnie does seem to speak quite highly of Will. Once again, he was Vinnie signing. He's done very well at Derry, so perhaps his return to the Dundalk squad could be a positive. But yeah, just how much control and how much scope Vinnie has, I suppose, will become apparent quite quickly. We'll be hoping that, having given him the job, the owners will now learn from the mistakes and let him get on with it, and that some sort of positive relationship can be, you know, forged between him and Jim McGilton. Because, I mean, I think if those two guys do kind of strike up some sort of harmonious relationship together, both of them have a contribution to make. For now, we'll be wishing Vinnie the best of luck. One of the big immediate battles that he faces is the fate of Chris Shields. We've had ominous speculation this week, not just rumors, but, you know, many reports in the media that a deal to transfer Chris Shields to Linfield is almost complete, with the club having agreed to transfer him and Chris apparently having agreed, or more or less agreed, personal terms with Linfield. Judging from tonight's performance, once again, we saw that Chris Shields is a very, very influential player for Dundalk FC. And given the sort of, you would imagine there would be, you know, major trimming to be done to the squad, Chris has been one of the old reliables that has performed to a pretty decent level in these difficult circumstances. A leader on the field, and definitely a player that you would want to keep to try and rebuild a new team around. Do you think there's any hope of keeping Chris at the club? And is it going to be a big litmus test of Vinny's abilities as a manager to see if he can persuade Chris to stay at this late hour?
I don't think we should put it onto Vinny's plate to be a litmus test, because when you look at the turmoil Dundalk FC has been in, you know, since Vinny left the first time, you know, you can't blame any player for wanting, you know, to go somewhere else. And when I say somewhere else, like Chris is northern based, you know, he lives closer to Linfield than he does to Dundalk FC. And Linfield are going, apparently, I don't know, correct me if I'm incorrect, but Linfield are going full time next year. Did I read that? So they're going full time next year. So, like, why wouldn't he want to go to a club like Linfield? Like, Linfield are a massive club, amazing stadium, you know, probably the best stadium on the island. But I mean, in terms of, like, when you look at, like, League of Ireland teams and Irish League teams, they have an amazing stadium, facilities, fan base. And if they're going full-time, they obviously have aspirations for Europe. And Chris Shields will fit right in there like a hand in a glove. So, like, I mean, if he wants to go to Linfield because it's closer to home and somewhere that exists in Oriel Park, then I'd say fair play to him and good luck to him. And good luck to Linfield for getting him, because he's an amazing player. I don't think we should be putting this on Vinny's plate, because I don't think it's down to one man. Sure, we don't even know, like, what's happening over in Oriel. Like, we have Vinny back in, Jim's, you know, doing his job, Bill over in Florida. Like, it's the pallets, they're moving all the time. So, you know, I don't think we should put that on Vinny's plate.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I don't think, like, if this happens or doesn't happen, it's anything to do with Vinny. I would say, listen, if the overwhelming amount of rumours, tweets, news stories, I think it's a done deal. From everything I've heard, it's a done deal. So, assuming it's happening, my take would be this. First of all, I don't think anyone can blame him. Okay. First of all, he owes us nothing. Chris Shields owes us nothing. And not to just drag in something else, but I also feel that we talked about it before in this podcast, but I think that the animosity that has been displayed against Sean Gannon for me is nonsense. Like, Sean Gannon owes us nothing. And I don't see how Dundalk fans can week in, week out, absolutely slate the club, say it's a disaster, say it's, protest outside the club, and for a second blame an employee of that club for leaving. How can you stand outside and chant and blame the club and say, this is bad, and say to someone, but you should stay? So that's nonsense to me. So none of these players owe us anything, like those players of that ilk. Chris Shields owes us nothing. He is absolutely, I mean, I would love for him to stay. I wish he would retire at the club. He's an absolute club legend. But given, like, forget about Vinny Perk's appointment and forget about any potential for turning it around. Look at the last 12 months. Absolutely chaotic. And what I would say to any fan who has any animosity, whatever, like, do you have that much loyalty to the person who employs you? Because when anyone changes a job, it's like, oh, I heard you got a new job. Great. But in football, it's never that way. It's always, oh my God, you abandoned your club. Did you abandon your company when you got a pay rise from another company? No. So, like, that's just nonsense. Would love him to retire with the club. He's forever a club legend. But given what's gone on recently, no one can blame him. There's also the personal stuff. It's a club closer to home. But why wouldn't someone get out? If fans sit there and say, this is chaotic, this is pathetic, this is this, why wouldn't someone want to get out? I think the damage is done. Would have loved to have saved him. Would have loved to have saved Sean Gannon. Would have loved to have saved Sean Hoare. But listen, this rot is years old and it can be fixed. It will be fixed. But we're going to have to, you know, lose some players along the way. So I think everything I've read, it's a done deal. Don't blame him. But we'll forever be grateful.
But taking you up on that point for a minute, I think there was definitely a perception over the course of the close season that there was a variety of Dundalk greats who were made to feel like they weren't wanted at the club. Certainly the likes of Dane Massey, who was just let go. Sean Hoare, who we believe was offered a contract that didn't even meet the basic legal sort of requirements of the league. Sean Gannon, who didn't seem to be offered the deal that, you know, he would have wanted or felt acceptable. And you would really worry that, you know, are we looking at somebody like Chris Shields, the club captain, like one of the legends of the past 10 years? Has he been made to feel like he is not wanted at Dundalk FC at the moment? Because that would be tragic. Now, I don't know that if that's the case or not. Like, maybe he's just taken a sort of holistic view of the situation and decided that, you know, he doesn't need the hassle in his life. But, you know, you would worry that there is maybe more to it than that. And if the latter is the case, then I would be more concerned, because it's one thing about a player just deciding to walk away, but it's another thing for a player of Chris's caliber to be made feel like he's not wanted at the club. And so for the club to, I don't know, put up, as far as I can tell, virtually no resistance to selling him, like, that worries me a lot.
Sorry, I should say one thing. That's my point, I guess. I'm not disagreeing with any of that. I don't blame the player for going, but I totally think the blame is with the club. But I think that goes without saying at this stage, similar to Sean Gannon and Sean Hoare, which is there's no impetus for a player to stay. But that's totally on the club. Sorry, I should stress this. That is totally on the club, but I don't think it's on the player, was my point.
Well, I mean, the club has agreed to sell him, so that's an indication that they're willing to let him go. But that was prior to Vinnie Burt's arrival. Now, I don't know if it's too late. Perhaps his head has been turned. Perhaps contracts have already been signed.
This is the other thing, Ken, as well. Sorry to interject and interrupt you. And I know, if you don't mind, but because we don't know what Vinnie's contract is, and if we're trying to build stability and players are trying to build stability around their own contracts and their own livelihoods, then, like, can Vinnie say, well, look, I'm only here till the end of the season, I'm only here for a season and a half. You know, can I entice you to stay for an extra couple of months? I think that's where we are in the grey area. Sorry for interjecting.
No, I mean, I don't think staying for an extra couple of months is a serious offer from the club if Linfield are going to give him a multi-season deal. You know, once again, you're repeating the mistake you made with Sean Hoare. You know, saying, well, play for the first third of the season and then we'll see where we go from there. I mean, that's just not a serious offer. But my hope rather than my expectation is that Vinnie Peart can say to Chris Shields, I want to rebuild the team around you. I have talked to the owners. We are going to make you an improved offer on a contract, which is, you know, better than Linfield's offer. And we have a new mission here. It's to save the club from relegation this season, and it's to get back competing next season. I think that's the pitch that I would love to think Vinnie is making to Chris, because judging by tonight, we couldn't beat Longford with Chris Shields. If Chris Shields leaves Dundalk FC, we are in serious trouble regarding getting clear of the relegation zone. And, you know, that's an outcome, like being relegated. That's an outcome that becomes a real, well, it becomes more probable without Chris Shields than with him. Not only will he have a value next season and the season after as regards that continuity, like, I mean, he's still a quality player. He's one of the best in the country in that position. I mean, if we let him go, all I would ask of the club is this, so you give him a contract offer and let him decide. And if Chris decides that he wants a new scene, I don't think anybody could blame him, given the, once again, the chaos and the misrule and the disrespect the players have been shown by the club. But I would say this to those who are running Dundalk FC, at least give your best player, captain, and a legendary player who we need, who we desperately need, and who a new team could be built around, at least make him an offer and let him decide. And don't simply resign yourself to losing him. Just, you know, like, I mean, if they don't make Chris Shields an offer of another contract, if they want to cash in on him for a pittance, well, that's that they're just repeating the catastrophic decisions of letting proven quality players go. And we see where that has landed us.
Yeah, well, I think we might be about to let our joint top scorer for the season so far go as well, which, considering the trouble we're having in front of goal, doesn't bode too well either.
Yeah, and it's one aspect of Chris's game that we don't generally rely on him for.
But can I also say on that, sorry, on that point, which is, if he has 6 months left to go on his contract, is the argument that, like, it's this kind of thing, like, oh, we're selling him, we're selling him, but he's gone in 6 months anyway. So is it that big of a tragedy?
Well, I mean, look, if this is to save money, like, I actually was, despite the terrible position that the club has been placed in by the capricious, you know, and erratic decisions that have been made, I thought that when the news broke that Matt Holzhauser was seemingly taking more of an interest in the overspend and the budget and the bloated budget, I thought, well, at least the benefit here is that we might get rid of the players who haven't contributed to the team and probably can't contribute to the team because they're not good enough. And we know that there have been players brought in from abroad, from the American collegiate system, who, you know, seemingly can't even get a loan deal with that loan. Okay, so, you know, that's money that's being poured down the drain. Like, if we are cutting back, that's where it should be cut back. You know, we don't need, you know, players who clearly have no role to play in helping us get away from our current position in the table. We don't need them hanging around the club, consuming resources, consuming rent, consuming expenses, when they have no future at the club and they have no present at the club and they have no past at the club. Okay, they're simply here. They're the personifications of misallocated resources. If you want to begin to cut the budget, we could lose 10 of them and we'd still have a squad of 25 players, okay, which is still too big, considering what we did with a squad of about 17 under Stephen Kenny. That is where the fat is. That's where the fat needs to be trimmed. To begin to cut the budget by getting rid of your captain, you're probably your most consistent and versatile player, your joint top goal scorer, to flog him off in a fire sale and plunge yourself further into a relegation battle by losing your inspirational talisman, that's just crazy. It's another act of self-harm by the owners of the club. It's reloading the revolver above our already shattered feet and shooting another round into our metatarsals. So, I mean, you know, here we are again. There is no rationale for selling Chris Shields. We need him for 6 months. If we've got him for just 6 months, we need him. We need to get away from the relegation zone, and he can help us do that. And if we sell him for buttons, the cost could be a great deal more if we slip further and further into the relegation mire.
And the other side of the question that Rory asked is, like, you know, like, maybe he just doesn't want to stay. Maybe he sees, you know, what...
Because, listen, I'll answer that directly. A demoralized Chris Shields wanting out of the club at the end of the season is still better than probably a dozen players at their best on our squad. You know, like, I mean, if he only wants to give us 6 more months through gritted teeth, we still need him, okay? It's not as if he's given up the ghost on the field of play. I think even if Chris's future is in Belfast, we need him right now. We need him for the rest of the season.
But maybe he just doesn't like the working conditions.
But the one thing I will say, because I've seen this chatter on Twitter, Damien, which is about he wants to go. But there is one other thing, is he's contracted. That's the other thing which I think really needs to put in. Like, as fans of the club, and we've seen this across world football about player power or whatever, he is contracted. And Ken's right to one degree, which is someone may want to do something, but it's the club's decision ultimately. And I think this is really maybe Ken's point, which is the club will choose to sell him now, right? But they don't have to. And that's the big... A player can say, I want to go. And other than the extreme circumstances, you know, in world football, like, you know, Gareth Bale refusing to play or these kind of situations, most times, you know, players don't really do the extreme to get away. But if a player goes, yeah, I'd like to leave, whatever. But they're still contracted.
And I don't believe, like, this is one of the things I'm hoping maybe Vinny can change. I can understand perfectly why Linfield would be a really attractive prospect to a Dundalk player who could get away, you know, last week or the week before, because we were in a terrible state and seemingly going nowhere and getting worse. When you bring a league-winning manager back into the equation, who could possibly sit you down and say, we're going to get back to where we were. Don't leave. You're already a legend here. I want you to get your testimonial. I want you to just picture us in 3 or 4 years' time when Dundalk play Manchester United or Tottenham Hotspur for your testimonial and Oriel Park is full and everybody's chanting your name and we're back being competitive. That's the vision that could perhaps persuade Chris Shields to stay, that things are going to change under Vinnie Perth and the nightmare, you know, the nightmare phase, the destruction phase that we've been in. And there's now light at the end of the tunnel if he'll just stick with it. I think that's the only pitch that can be made to him. And like you've said, if Chris genuinely says, I've had enough, I want to change the scene, like you say, he has given us such service that, you know, we'd be forever grateful for all that he has achieved and we wouldn't stand in his way. But I'd stand in his way until the end of his contract because we need him. And as long as he's contracted with the club, I would be keeping Chris Shields.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, the only other, I suppose, point I would raise is that maybe losing Chris Shields to Linfield is one of the less worse options. Like, if we lost him to somebody else in the league, I don't know, like a Bohemians or, you know, anybody who's ahead of us in the table, really, like Pat Strada, you know, anybody like that, like, I think that would be a bigger blow. And I think in the back of my mind, I'm really worried that the likes of Pat Hoobin or David McMillan might end up in a Shamrock Rovers shirt in the not too distant future. Like, that would be certainly a big missing piece in their jigsaw. So the thought of people going north of the border seems like I say, a less worse option in that case.
Yeah, I suppose that is the one consolation that he won't be an asset that will be used against us in the future if he goes to Linfield, unless, of course, we meet them in the Champions League. Just turning to Twitter for a moment, some of the comments on tonight's performance. Generally speaking, most people have seen signs of improvement. Shane McGurk says, we could have lost 3-1, but yet we could have won 3-1. An improved performance with more energy. Alan Matthews has come in and said, definitely improvement, but we seem afraid to take a shot from any distance, trying to pass the ball into the net. Some great play at times, but the defence still nowhere near right. And Jack McArdle has come in and says, an improvement, just really lacking the cutting edge, need to take our chances a lot better. So generally speaking, I suppose there's, you know, green shoots of optimism among the fans. They thought that there was a little bit of an improvement tonight. We did create plenty of chances. Obviously, you know, the shortcomings of the squad aren't all that hard to find. But you would hope that maybe something can be done to improve the confidence and the levels of creativity now that we have a league-winning manager back at the helm. So it's on to Drogheda then on Monday night. Drogheda have been doing very well. We were lucky enough to actually to beat them earlier on in Oriel Park in the season. What would your thoughts be regarding that as a challenge? Do you think Vinny can build on the positives of tonight's performance and do the double over Drogheda?
Well, Drogheda got hammered tonight 5-0, and we had a bit of spark to us. So that would maybe imply something. But to be honest with you, I am so far beyond predicting anything from this Dundalk team. I genuinely have no anticipation or expect anything. If you look at tonight's, like, our performance, maybe new manager and a definitely improved performance, and them getting spanked might give you one indication. But to be honest with you, who knows?
Yeah, it's hard to tell. Like, given our Jekyll and Hyde performances, you know, so far this season, we might actually come out with a good performance next week. And, you know, on a decent grass surface, you know, with a point to prove against Rada, you know, maybe that's actually the opportunity we need to come out all guns blazing.
We'll see what Vinny can manage over the weekend. It's probably good to have games coming thick and fast as he reestablishes himself in the dressing room. And, you know, it would be a great opportunity with the levelling effect of a derby game to see if we can get his first win of his new tenure. We'll be back on Monday night to discuss what will hopefully be another traditional victory in United Park. But for now, thank you very much for joining me for the chat, Martin Mullen, Rory Murphy and Damien Kenny. And thank you guys for listening. And we'll be back on Monday night to discuss, hopefully, victory over Drogheda and a winning start or the first win of Vinnie Peart's return at the helm of Dundalk FC. But until then, thanks for listening.